And we are back. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Got a variety of stuff going on today. It's going to get a little opinionated, I guess. Best forewarned to give anyone that there will be some thoughts and opinions expressed. And, you know, I'm glad you tune in to hear them. And if you don't want to hear them, maybe tune out. Because, yeah, I don't really want people to be unhappy that there's a free exchange of ideas here. Even if it's not an idea you necessarily agree with. At the same way, if you have criticisms or comments or corrections, I would welcome them. You know, I always enjoy being proven wrong about something if it's a good discourse and a good discussion. So it's always cool to learn things. There was San Diego Comic-Con on the weekend, so we had so much new stuff kind of paraded out in front of us. Yeah, I don't even know where to start. We're going to be probably, like, mostly into the Marvel and the issues related to that for the majority of this, but I did want to take a minute. Previously, when there have been global terror attacks or just tragedies in general, I'd like to take a second to shed a light on it. I imagine most people have heard of it by now. I think it was in 3-4 days ago. But there was an animation studio in Kyoto, which is called Kyoto Animation. It's in the Fushimi Ward, if that matters to anybody. They were the victim of an arson attack. I don't think this is... It's not a terrorist or anything, as far as I understand. It's, I think... I've heard conflicting stories that it was either a comic artist, like a mangaka, who was under the impression that the company had stolen his ideas or was copywriting his material. Or he was just a kind of low-life career criminal who had a history of mental illness and criminal convictions. And maybe a mix of both, I don't know. But 34 people were killed. And 35, I think, were injured in addition, which is just such a tremendous number. And, yeah, I mean, it's all over the headlines that it's one of the deadliest, like, massacres, I guess, loss of life since the Second World War and in post-World War II Japan. So there's a lot of crowdfunding going on. There's a lot of support networks out there for the victims. And obviously, if you can, try to donate. That's always something that's important to do. And even if you can't, I think being informed is extremely important. This was, you know, we don't see tragedies happen in localized, far-off places in the world as something so remote anymore. I mean, this is a city the same as, you know, New York or London or Seoul. I mean, it's a little closer, but, you know, things like this can happen to anyone at any time, and it's, you know, we're a sort of global village that way, that when it happens to one of us, it really should resonate with all of us, because I'm sure the 34 people, you know, I'm sure the 69 people in general all went to work that day not expecting to either lose their lives or... God, one of the people, like, lost his legs. It's just gruesome. Thankfully, if there's any... It's not a silver lining, but they caught the culprit, who's pretty fucked up from burns, which, you know, I'm going to say you deserve, but he's under, like, medical sedation, so once he's back on his feet, hopefully they... look to their past of Tokugawa-era punishments for such crimes, because fuck that guy, man. I don't give a shit if they stole all your work. I mean, you get some of the biggest names in comics in North America accusing each other of covering up and stealing and, you know, the whole Bob Kane-Bill Finger disagreement, and I guess the closest parable from Marvel would be... Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. But I'm not going to get into all that, especially most of those are too soon. Anyway, it's very important to not be a crazy fucking arsonist dickhead and burn a building. If you really have that inclination to burn stuff, go camping. Have a campfire. If you are unable to do that, then go purchase. I don't know what they're called in your country or language, but There are these usually, I guess, cylindrical wax constructs that have a rope that runs through the middle of them, and they can be lit alight, and you can combust a flame and attach it to that if you're really so hard up for combusting things without having to kill people or maim them. And that's a candle, of course. So don't be a crazy monster and hurt people, especially in that way. And something that goes with that saying is a lot of the series that are attached to this studio are being halted. And I think one of the reasons I was just kind of taken was the amount of, like, toxic comments and vitriol of people complaining. Like, well, I don't understand why this should affect, like, the release of some episodes or chapters and stuff. And it's like, oh my god. Figure out your priorities, please. But, no, it's terrible. Japan's, for all of its, you know, faults societally that you could say in their economy or whatever, and this is, it's never been a violent society. And obviously, post Second World War, the Japanese Constitution was sort of rewritten and reestablished, and it sort of changed the vibe, and that's what we're talking about here. But this is the country that gave us kawaii culture, and it's like, you know, just feels like an especially tarnishing act on somewhere that you, since, you know, the 40s is such a peaceful reputation, like Canada, but then we have terror attacks here, so, you know, there's always going to be bad apples. It's just kind of the duty of the good apples to not let it spoil the bunch. It's given some weird sentience to apples in that example, but, I mean, as I've mentioned, my son, Arthur, this is a good time to, like, say that he does have a Japanese middle name, and a lot of this is very important to me, but Arthur's, primary goal that for him that I want is just to be a good guy. I mean, I'd like to think that he'll be going to school, and, like, I went to university, and then after I went to college, and I'd like to think that he would strive to obtain some kind of higher education in some way, but more importantly, I'd rather he just be someone who's a good person, you know, someone who's willing to help the needy and put himself, you know, put others before himself at times, and, you know, just be a positive contributing member to society and to, I don't know, just be a force of good, you know. I think that's, you know, I don't have too many friends and counterparts, contemporaries with kids to swap notes on, but everyone seems to fixate a lot on career potential and travel plans and educational highlights and milestones to strive towards, and at the end of the day, it's just you got to think about in the context of the people in your own life and who are good people, who are the people that are, you know, just I don't want to use like a Boy Scout Superman type example, but, you know, there's people who intrinsically are good, and there's people who aren't, and they try to be good, and that's just as genuine and just as positive. But I've come from a family where even people in my own family are quite clearly able to be categorized in the good and evil sections, so it happens with people, and it's important to me, as it should be to all people, but it's not for me to tell you how to feel. But it's important that people are of, I don't know, a moral integrity, and people have a moral compass that always points north. Like, I don't care if wants to smoke weed and be in a Sublime tribute band. You know, if he's not, like, if every once in a while he gives some change to, like, a homeless person, or he helps an old lady cross the road, or stop on the side of the road and help someone boost their car. As in, like, gets died from the battery, not, like, steal a car. Boost is kind of confusing that way. But, yeah, and I really don't doubt he will be. I mean, there's literally no way to tell anything about how a baby will turn out, no matter what kind of, like, whack job parent theories people have. I'm like, oh, I can tell from his neck jerking, like, he's gonna be a smart man. Like, no. But he is cute as hell and, like, super adorable, and he's got really nice blue eyes. But I just have a feeling he'd be, like, a really good dude. My brother's a good guy. So, you know, the parental influence is not that, it's not the end-all and be-all. But we'll move on to some happier stuff. I guess happier in terms of subject matter, but the opinions are kind of the same emotional beat. So San Diego Comic-Con brings us just a plethora of news. TV, movies, comics, games, all that shit. Good stuff. It feeds the nerd hunger, that nerd thirst that we all feel. There's a lot of stuff. I'm probably going to throw it into another episode that I do. I don't know who the we is, the royal we, but at some point this week, maybe I'll double down on that, because there's just a lot to process. But I had some reactions to this Marvel stuff, and I was out of town, so I was unable to watch it. I was also unable to participate in the live Fortnite event, which killed me, because I think I've been in all of them since. I call it the Great Blunder, but people call it the Choosing, when they brought that fucking Tommy Gunn back instead of my beloved airplanes. Hashtag X2 for life. But, yeah, this was, I think, I actually haven't looked into it, because for what it's worth, I enjoy a bit of the lore. So I'm waiting to take myself in-game around and explore what's going on before I look it up and watch the video. But I was holding Arthur in one hand, and I was just trying to, like, auto-land, like, locked in my moonbit and on a coordinate. And so I was kind of only half paying attention, because, we're trying to sort him out. And so I noticed, like, an addition to the map, and as I'm getting closer to it, and I was maybe dropping a little bit north of it, and it's like a giant fucking kaiju skeleton laid up on the hill with this sword, and it's the fountain statue from Neo Tilted, and as the handle, and it's fucking awesome. It's crazy. I landed there, there's some weapons in it, killed a few guys there, died because Arthur started, like, drooling on my arm, and I was like, why is my hand wet? Aw, you're cute. Oh, I'm dead. In that order. So, yeah, I haven't actually been on since, but I'm looking forward to jumping in it. I imagine the mech Megazord Jaeger that they were building at the volcano is now, like, defender of the realm, and it laid up some kaiju, but yeah, it's going to be a good time. It's the end of the season in a little while, so Fortnite's good. Stay on that. But see if there's a way we can not spend too much time on Fortnite, because I think when the season turns over, I'm going to bore you guys with it. So we'll jump back to this Comic-Con business. Marvel pretty much charted out the next, I don't know, 5 years, 4 years, give or take. So the same way that we had Phase 1, which was obviously all the OG movies and some of their sequels, and Avengers, and then Phase 2 was, I think, I don't know, it was like Iron Man 3 until probably, I guess, Avengers 2, Age of Ultron. And then I think Civil War until... No, it's Ant-Man, I think, is the end of Phase 2, which comes after Ultron. And then similarly, Civil War until Far From Home, because they always kind of end in a light one. Avengers 1, obviously, was kind of light, comparatively. When you think of the percentage of movies and Avengers movies that are, like, grim battles about extinction. So we have Phase 4 that gets announced. And I gotta tell you guys, I'm coming at this, I'll give you a bit of a background so that I'm not just some angry nerd on the internet ranting. I'm a pretty major cinephile. I love movies, okay? I grew up watching movies constantly. As, like, a kid of an abusive household at my dad's place, my favorite activity was just waiting till everyone was asleep and watching DVDs and, like, the DVD player I got for Christmas, like, I don't even remember when. But that thing was God bless that thing. It was, like, hot as fuck, and it would run really loud, and I'd, like, have to have it on my chest. Because it's, like, the laptop style, like, lying in bed. And then, like, cover up with a blanket to muffle the... It was hot as fuck, but I watched, like, innumerable movies that way. And, like, some really weird gems you wind up loving, like The Guardian. Go figure. The, what's his name? Ashton Kutcher helicopter rescue movie. Loved it. I don't know. Weird guilty pleasure. But, I've been involved on and off with the film industry, not as a career, until I was fortunate enough to kind of work for some, work on some projects through where I work now. As I mentioned, we do a lot of leasing of our space and renting it out to film production, so we do a lot of TV, a lot of Netflix shows, and a lot of films. Films tend to be, the majority of them are like Canadian films, but we've had major films here. I mean, like the same way that Suicide Squad was here, I think we had some shooting from theirs in our exterior, but I wasn't, unfortunately, here then. But it's been fascinating. Spent a year getting to actually get my hands on a set, get to like direct people as to where certain film shoots might be more ideal or more strategic locations to place equipment. I've been privy to like reading a script and reviewing, and it's been... it's always amazing to watch shooting. I mean, to see maybe 200 people on a massive soundstage, a massive set, all go silent and watch with focused intent as, like, two or three people in the middle of it all perform a scene. And as soon as that cut, the volume resumes, and it's amazing. Movie making is magic. So I love the movies. And I guess we've got to throw this stuff in there, really. Because I'm going to lump it all together as my preface to this. I also, you know, I love women, not in a crazy, weird, creepy way, not in a way that that comes across. Like, I mean, like, Thor Ragnarok style, like, in a respect way. Until maybe 3-4 years ago, I always considered myself a feminist, as someone who believes that women obviously should be equal to guys in how they're treated, but I have a very hard time myself, and I would hope that a lot of people have a hard time associating with feminism now, because it's been sort of dragged down to be this almost toxic, aggressive, man-hating philosophy of supremacy, and this is very radicalized. And I do my best to watch a lot of content on both sides of an issue. So, for example, I guess a very good sort of microcosm example is lately the two most popular things that I'm watching are Last Week Tonight with John Oliver and Louder with Crowder and his, like, change my mind stuff. So as left and as right as you can get. And I like them both. And not just because content's entertaining when it's entertaining, not because of the motive, but both sides can always bring an interesting point. It's always about hearing both sides. So I like a good discourse. Very politically open-minded. Whenever people say, like, I'm not a racist, that comes across as, like, kind of racist. But I assure you that however that comes across, myself, of my Jewish background and Scottish heritage, and my wife of her African ancestry, and my son being a combination of those things, I like to think kind of clears me from that accusation, as well as my, homosexual brother. And, I mean, they don't really have a term for my dad, but there are so many pronouns, I'm sure he'll find one. Anyway, I say all that because all too often, genuine criticisms get marred with accusations of those things. And what I'm here to talk about is the quality of what we're going to be experiencing. So, starting pretty, I guess, criticism-free, they have Shang-Chi coming out. I think that's super cool. I think, I studied a lot of Chinese history, too, when I was in school, and just to give us a good Hollywood Chinese movie, I think is fucking awesome. Because I watched The Great Wall, and it's kind of a guilty pleasure, because I think the costumes are just so gorgeous, and then the spectacle of it's great, but it's a Chinese movie, so it doesn't sort of have the Hollywood capacity, and I think the Hollywood stylings that that I want, I guess, that we that the world wants for an MCU movie. So I think it'll be amazing. This, the cast is supposed to be great. That's an amazing example of a movie that is diverse and is fantastic. It's a premise that you're taking a character who is diverse, but maybe did not get the spotlight for how many years, because comics have always been centered on kind of a white guy as a primary character. So you're taking him and bringing him to the spotlight, and I think that's fucking awesome. I don't know too much about it. I glanced at the cast. They look good. Should be great. I mean, I would take some heed in the fact that the closest approximate that you've had to this was the Iron Fist. Don't give me the he's because he's white. The show was bad, and it'd be bad if he was Asian, and it was just bad. So how you handle Enchanted Kung Fu is always challenging. But prove me wrong. I think it'll be great. Okay, Thor, Love and Thunder. This is tough. I guess we're going in order. This I got a little bit of criticism of, but believe it or not, overall, I can't even land on either side of this. So for those of you that don't know, and if you're on the internet, I don't know how you wouldn't, the next Thor movie, so the fourth Thor 4, it's going to be Taika Waititi. Hilarious. What We Do in the Shadows is one of my favorite movies of all time. Thor Ragnarok's great. It's a treat. He's directing a movie where Thor is no longer worthy, and the mantle is taken over by Natalie Portman, who becomes the Goddess of Thunder. Now, again, it's based on a comic where this does happen. I looked into it, and it's not just to spew inaccuracies. The comic run did not do well. It had decent selling power at the beginning. It's the same way that Spider-Man issue with Barack Obama had great selling power, because when it's like a special feelings, like a one-off departure, you want to get it at the time. So its further issues did not continue that success, and it just was not a story that people necessarily were drawn to. And it's because of an issue that we're going to circle back to. You can take a character like Thor and make it a woman to try and appease women, or you can be a good writer and a good content creator and make a good character that is a woman. You're not doing anyone any favors by washing, just whitewash, female wash, black, white, whatever you want to call it. By doing that, you're showing that there aren't good ideas left, and it's been a disappointing theme of this entire exhibition. So I will say, I love Natalie Portman, and when I was a younger man, literally loved. I mean, there were like posters in my room, because Attack of the Clones, man, that belly top, she was my slave Leia. But Black Swan's an amazing movie, V for Vendetta is an amazing movie, and just extremely talented, and not just as beautiful and everything, but she's brilliant. She's got a master's degree in, I want to say, like, chemical engineering or something. Just, like, an absolute delight and such a wonderful person. And in a way, she's not only a woman, but she's Jewish, and so it's sort of a huge move for inclusivity. And I think if anyone was going to be female Thor, I'm so happy and proud that it's her. But I just don't think we need female Thor. We had Thor establish an endgame that, despite being Fat Thor, who's my favorite Thor, I think they call him Bro Thor as like a softer way to put it, but who cares, he's a delight. Bro Thor is still shown to be worthy of wielding Mjolnir, because when he goes back to the land of Thor the Dark Realm, and he can still pull it, he's still worthy. And now he is Stormbreaker. So, had you not had that, I would make way for the argument that, yeah, he's no longer worthy, she's always been worthy. In the comics, she's like a life-saving UN doctor, paramedic or something, or maybe just an ambulance paramedic in New York, I don't know. But life-saving, and her value as a good character is fine with me. It's just, you would be better off with a character like Valkyrie. And I know, don't tell me she's going to be in the movie. Obviously she's going to be in the movie. But when you create a character from scratch, like, I'm sorry, it doesn't have the history or the legacy you want. Maybe you can borrow from characters that were in the comics. But when you create one that is a role designed for an actress and designed to be a powerhouse experience for a woman. I think that's way better. I think that you wind up compromising and making both camps a little unhappy when you take one that maybe... And, you know, there seems to be this conception that there's something wrong with comics having a history of being predominantly male, because, like it or not, that is the history. The comic writers, predominantly, majority were male. Readership, overwhelming majority were male. And this only really starts to turn in the, maybe like the Silver Age, and maybe from there even not nearly until like the spike of the 2000s, but now, because in 2019 it's cool and hip to be a quote comic nerd or a nerd girl or something, doesn't mean that you need to suddenly abandon your previous constituents and your lifetime customers and people who have, you know, not that you owe them anything, but in a way you do, because they've been supporting this industry, and so you're gonna allow them to support the redirection of it away from them, and it's just, it's why you lose some readership. So, Natalie Portman's amazing. I'm sure we're gonna get a fantastic movie, because her alone, that's got some selling power. But Taika Waititi does just the best job, and a lot of people put Ragnarok as the top of their Marvel list, so it's gonna be great. You know, it frustrates me because it just screams unnecessary. It screams a move for inclusivity and political correctness, because you have absolute confirmation that he still wields Mjolnir, and I'm sure they're going to come up with a fantastic reason why she's got to do it. And I know there's something to do with she has cancer and using it is making her cancer worse, and she still does. It just seems like we would have a better time if, A, you didn't give him Mjolnir back, and I swear to God, if you try to take that scene away from Cap where he gets it, you know, we're going to have words. Cap will still get it, and right around that, but her taking ownership of Mjolnir would be a lot more agreeable if he was no longer worthy, but we know he is, so I don't know, but hey, let's see what they do. That one I'm excited for. Okay, the last two are not a thumbs-up category, because the first two were, you know, positive, but with some comments, but we've moved to the negative. So I gotta say, fuck them remaking Blade. Blade has been one of my favorite trilogies of movies since I was a kid, since I was way too young to have seen those movies. That guy kicks ass. Wesley Snipes was that role in a way that Robert Downey Jr. was kind of the role of the Iron Man. Like he just owned it. He was fucking cool. His gadgets were cool. He had like a Alfred, maybe Q type relationship going on with Wesker, who would just... Wesker's Resident Evil. With Whistler, who'd give him his gear. It was the shit, man. You fuck out vampires, and the way they would explode into ash was amazing, and even if the CGI doesn't necessarily age incredibly, it was a unique take on it. It was really good. Blade 2, I think, was actually my favorite for a long time, because I love, you know, I have that special kryptonite. Like, nothing gets me more in a movie than a unique, dynamic team of specialized experts, each with their own skill. Like Avengers style, Ocean's 11 style. I love it. Good team up. So you have two, the Donnie Yen with a katana, and you have that big dude with the hammer, and they're fighting these zombie mandible sewer dwellers. Great movie. Blade kicks ass. It's a good time. But then Blade Trinity with Ryan Reynolds, you have the Deadpool character. This was... You CGI a red suit into... I guess onto him in these scenes. Shot for shot, it could be a Deadpool movie. He's got the quips. He's got the lighthearted bisexual commentary and flirting. He's got just... Yeah, he's quick as a whip, and it's such... I don't know, he's just so charming. Not just as a Canadian, my bias, it's just... Ryan Reynolds is just a treat. Seems like a super nice guy. So, Blade Trinity fucking kills it. You got Jessica Biel. And more importantly, you have, like, this really stupid fucking weapon that's pretty much the shape of a bow. But the string is like a lightsaber. But it's confusing because they bill this movie as being, like, some sort of, there's this integral archery element that she brings to it because she has a bow and she can, like, shoot around corners and all this stuff. And this thing looks like a bow, but it's backwards and weird and seems super impractical. But it can cut through a vampire like a hot knife through butter, so that's all that's important. Also, I think they get their gadgets and shit made by this blind woman, which is very cool and very progressive. And they show her keyboard, which has Braille on it, and I thought that was wicked. But it's really bothered me, like, thinking about it over the years, of, like, how does she do certain things? Because it seems, as soon as there's, like, a vampire breaks in, you really feel for her, man. Anyway, Blade does not need to be remade. I get it. I get you want to have him in the MCU. I want to have him in it, too. But do it to us softly, man. Don't do it in a way that takes away our Blade. Okay, so the casting is Mahershala Ali, which is pretty awesome, but also a little confusing, because he's done, like, two Marvel things already. He was that, he did the cool uncle who was a villain in Spider-Verse, and then in the Luke Cage show, he's the villain. Super cool, fantastic actor. I'm not complaining about the casting. If it's going to be anyone, it's cool to be him. But give us a movie where it's Wesley Snipes as his age now, as the dad retiring, or as the Batman to the Robin, or the, you know, give it, I don't know, there's just no, I don't want to say there's no respect for the past, because I'm going to sound like a fucking 90-year-old man, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of reverence for the source material, which is sometimes hard to see. Like, to have a trilogy of movies that were, they kind of were definitive Marvel movies at a time where there wasn't an MCU. They were, like, the pioneers in that, and you could very easily, the same way that the MCU plays around with time and Easter eggs and connections, you could very easily incorporate it, but it just doesn't seem to be top of their list of priorities. Now, maybe we're going to get more out of it, but I don't know. I think Blade is supposed to be a movie, and since Disney Plus is going to have a lot of TV shows, maybe there'll be some background given there, but I don't know. I've heard speculation that it's to become a trilogy as well, and it's still a little early now to know for sure, but it's obviously intended to be, you know, he'll be there in Avengers 5, or Avengers 6, probably, 6. Yeah. So, you know, Blade, thumbs up for the casting and the idea of bringing him to the MCU. Everybody's been saying that for 10 years. But thumbs down if you're going to disregard the first three. I want to see references to it. I want to note, like, I want an acknowledgement that those movies happened. And I think the best way is you bring Wesley in. I mean, if you can bring in Whistler, but he's kind of old. He might be dead. I don't know. Hope he's not. Don't be offended if I was wrong about that. I'm sure you're very youthful looking in real life. Yeah, Blade 4. Don't know why you wouldn't do that direction. But, and they don't even have numbers. I mean, Trinity is, I guess, yeah, number 3 you would call it Trinity, but it's Blade, and then, no, oh no, it's Blade 2. I was like, I just argued myself in a box there. Okay, well, I don't know what you can do with it. I think it's on a good path. I just think that if you don't fucking make a reference to those movies, especially that, I want to hear Deadpool and, like, Deadpool 4 make a joke about Blade. Make that classic Ryan Reynolds wall break. And Eternals. So, let's just get right to this. I hate that whatever I say about the Eternals, I'm probably going to wind up eating those words in, like, a year and a half when it comes out, and it's like, oh my god, I don't know how they did it, it was the best movie ever, but, like, it's, this is just the pinnacle of what's wrong with the Marvel-Disney machine. So we're at a point where they've run out of steam. They've gone one full Marvel cycle with the Infinity Saga, and if anyone's familiar with the manga or the anime Bleach, it is the Aizen arc. So what that means is you have your entire creative premise, your entire drive and objectives tied into one villain and one story of the defeat of that villain. And then when that's done, you got nowhere to go, because you've exhausted all your best characters and resources and stories. And anyone who knows anything about storytelling, and not greed and gluttony, will tell you that that's a good time to end your story and walk away. But, you know, making money moves, yo. So the story continues, and it will never be as good as it was. And again, I hope I'm wrong. I'm really looking forward to being wrong. But I'm just not seeing it. I'm seeing a cast of people playing a cast of characters that I could not give a fuck about either. So the first thing that everyone says is, well, what about Guardians of the Galaxy? You don't know about Drax. You don't know about the Rocket. Like, okay, firstly, not entirely fair for either. I'm familiar with the comic source material for both. I have an Eternals comic on my shelf. It took me like 6 years to read it, because I got it for free comic book day. It was not great. Maybe I'll reread it and appreciate it more. But it's a... I don't like it the same reason I don't think the movie's going to be a tremendous success, because part of what's always been great about Marvel is that the New York superhero hub, that hub of realistic heroes, whether they're realistic or not, but grounded heroes in a place that's real is important. To ground them there and have recognizable landmarks and addresses and meetup spots and have that cross-connect is tremendously important. You have probably all your major teams based in New York. I mean, the Fantastic Four in the Baxter Building, the Avengers in the Avengers Tower, Spider-Man, wherever he may roam. You have the Sanctum Sanctorum in New York on Bleecker Street, but I am not going to try to get the number now. I think it's 17? That'd be too easy. Yeah, the majority of them, you know, not to mention things like Oscorp and the Daily Bugle, I almost said Planet, but Marvel has a familiarity, a large bubble of connectivity, and when you're in it, and when the stories are referential to that, that's where this MCU success came from. That's what DC tried to emulate and like quickly like crop up their own universe, and it was good. It had some definite strong points, but it's like a prefabricated house. I mean, there was no foundation solidly built there. And I'm not talking about a modern day. I'm talking about a 1950s, they would drive it on a shipping container truck to your place and put it on a flat piece of land, and that's the house. It's just a one-floor bungalow. I always have those. When I say a prefab house, people are like, oh, they're very nice, and they come with basements. I'm like, that's not what I mean. So, this is a movie where we're getting probably the biggest name star. We're getting Angelina Jolie coming in, and she's wanted to do the MCU for a while, and when actors say that, it's so fucking irritating, because it's like, oh, I saw how successful it was, and I wanted to be part of it. It's not really fair for the rest of us, eh, who'd like to be part of it, and aren't rich female celebrities, but also, what are you doing until now? You're just sitting there thinking, oh, wait and see how this plays out. I wonder if I should invest in Disney. So, I don't know what fucking took her so long and why she was not in this sooner, and I don't know why I sound angry about that. I'm not, but it seems like a power draw casting, like a Angelina Jolie. I mean, your parents know who that is. Like, she was classic beauty. Like, you know, you get that hubbub. Hub is the singular of hubbub. You get that going, and it matters. Salma Hayek as well, and both, full disclosure, both women in my younger days that were on this postered wall, because Salma Hayek's assets were legendary. But, yeah, these are probably, alongside maybe Richard Madden, I guess, is famous, not necessarily as famous, but you got these people who can't help but feel like they're the dregs outside of the people that have already been clever enough to get in on this MCU beast early on, but they're playing characters that really no one cares about. So not the way that, like, Star-Lord was kind of a, you know, outside character, and so was Iron Man. Like, this is the stuff that everyone who read comics was always kind of like, oh, it's a little crazy, yeah, you know, I've read some of it, but don't take my word for it. But I mean, I was someone who spent a lot of time going to different comic book stores and conventions and dressing up and swapping nerd spores. So gross, makes it sound like orcs. I guess in the smell of some of those places, that's not untrue, but swapping nerd stories with fellow travelers, and, you know, that was always the consensus. The Eternals and the sort of old gods and new gods of New Genesis and Apocalypse on the DC side were always very wacky. So they were always very derived from biblical and mythological sources, and most of the Eternals are based on, like, Greek and Roman mythology, and a lot of there's a lot of, like, Judeo-Christian biblology on the DC side, and they were just wacky. They were comic book writers in the 70s and 80s, really getting to play with some big ideas and some big characters, and the problem is, for both, is sort of similar. They work okay on their own as stories, but they don't really work well with the wider Marvel bubble. So that you know, bubble of interconnectedness worked well with the Guardians of the Galaxy because they were outside rookies. There was a team of four or five. It's not huge. And they had their own issues, but they brought the galactic side to it, and they connected that with the rest of the Marvel bubble. But they were, I wouldn't even say they were integral, but they were a component of defeating Thanos, and Thanos being defeated was a component of their quest, and it fit in very nicely because it's always been, since they were introduced, it was always this excitement of, like, oh, I can't wait for, you know, Rocket to meet Iron Man, I can't wait for Gamora to meet Black Widow. Like, you wanted to see them be part of it, and they fit very well. And just, you're basically starting from scratch now. You've benched your best players, your best jerseys have been retired, you're starting fresh in a way that we haven't really seen, and it's obviously scary, and going to see Far From Home and sort of getting a glimpse of Spider-Man being dressed up to be the next Iron Man, whether you acknowledge it or not in the movie, is something that's going to come. You know, Disney having a movie where you say, oh, are you going to be the next Iron Man? I don't know, don't pressure me. Like, that doesn't take away from the fact that you're just going to make him the next Iron Man, which is okay, but played well into the movie. But these are just characters and a scenescape that don't really look like they further the story that we were all so invested in. And just like with after the defeat of Aizen in Soul Society and Bleach, you have the same with the defeat of Thanos. And like your unifying force, this villain that was fantastic and monumental, is gone. To have beaten him, you're obviously establishing yourself at a certain power level. And if you roll up the next threat the next day, and he beats you, it doesn't make any sense, because where was he previously? And, well, you know, you do a lot to set up that you can defeat, you know, the ultimate evil and win the battle. And then it does a lot to paint after the battle and after the war the threats that you face. And I think with the strength of Captain Marvel and these Eternals being pretty much gods and Roman Greek-ish gods, it's going to be kind of wacky. There's a lot of, I guess we'll call it again, a lot of gender washing, a lot of sort of inclusivity initiatives that come off a little heavy-handed in this one. That's why I was a little frustrated. You have two characters on the team that are quite literally men that they just decided to cast as women, and that's okay, and it's okay in some degree. Again, you'd be better off just picking female characters and writing them better, or making better female characters, but that's fine. But you have a character, Makari, who was the Flash, I always thought, like Mercury, like the Roman god Mercury and Hermes to the Greeks and so on, and the Flash and so forth. And it's a colored woman who's also deaf, and it's like, when I heard that, I really thought it was just someone making like a troll comment of like, oh, it's such an SJW thing, hope it's, you know, another black deaf woman. And it's like, I actually couldn't believe it was. So, power to her for being, and I quote, from like BuzzFeed and everywhere, the MCU's first deaf hero. But that's so stupid and tarnished because it's not a deaf hero. It's a character that wasn't deaf that you hired a deaf actress to play. And that, to me, is ludicrous. It's ludicrous that that would be celebrated instead of actually creating a hero who's deaf. And I know for a fact that there's two major ones that always come up, because an ex-girlfriend of mine was deaf, and we had this argument, and I know my shit better than she does. So you have Hawkeye, who in recent incarnations, like the Matt Fraction series, is a hearing aid, and he's kind of hearing impaired. And then you have, I think her name is Echo, who shows up in some Spider-Man, in my Avengers versus Invaders comic. She's there when they're fighting Despair. And there's something called, like, the Blue something. It's like a deaf kid in real life asked his mom to mail into Marvel and ask why there wasn't it. And, like, anyway, they made the character. I don't think he's, like, in serious stuff, but I think it's super cute and touching. I love the story. But you can't say the first open, you know, openly deaf, like, it's a secret. The first deaf character when it's, in fact, not a deaf character. It's just a character that you've done that to. And it, again, would be way more impactful and I think, influential for further creation if you would actually make them have their own. Not that, you know, that sounds kind of harsh that way, but it seems like if I was hearing impaired, I would be looking for them to create stories about hearing impaired characters, not take characters that aren't and make them hearing impaired. So you have, her name's Lauren Ridloff. She's Makari. Power to her, honestly. I hope that none of this is one of, like, Daisy Ridley style, where there's a bunch of trolls that force her off Twitter and get mean to her. Like, actors gotta act, man. This is a job for these people, and I just, this, you know, anyone in their right mind would be crazy to turn down a Marvel role. So you can never get mad at these people for that. I don't blame them. I just think that the choice, maybe, to go in that direction is something that the motive should be examined on. The same with Selma Hayek, who's taking on Ajak, who's a man in the comics. Like, a pretty manly man at that, you would say. But, yeah. You know, it's kind of endemic of movie making now. There's a lot of moves and motives to appease, I guess, a very loud minority, as opposed to a silent majority of people who complain and want their complaints to be put into law. And it's tough. I don't imagine it's easy for the studio. I imagine a lot of this is bowing to that kind of pressure. But when you have a movie that, you know, I was reading an article after the Cats trailer came out that, because one of the actresses in Cats is black, she's, her makeup for her cat is, it's like a white cat, and people are like, well, why is she like, why are they lightening her skin, or they're covering up that she's black? And it's like, people are just looking to get mad at everything. I'm not upset that there's a, I'm looking at basically the Benetton ad of Marvel teams here. I'm not upset that they went out of their way to remove two white guys and replace them with ethnic women, one of which, a disabled ethnic woman. I'm just getting a little upset at the kind of overarching theme that that's okay, that when it's a white character, it's explicitly fine to recast their gender, their cultural identity, their origin, ethnicity. That's all completely fine, but I don't think that would ever play well in reverse. I don't think that you could bring Blade back to the Marvel Universe and have it be Ryan Gosling. Or I would actually make the argument that if you're not going to use Deadpool in the MCU, then Ryan Reynolds would be the perfect Blade, because you can literally have him carry on from Blade Trinity. Have him be a little older and a little more experienced, suggest that he'd been doing it. But that's my point. Nobody in their right mind wants a white Blade. I don't want a white Blade. I want my Wesley Snipes Blade. I want it like Dark Knight Returns, like old fucking out-of-shape Blade kicking ass. But I feel like it's always way more important to make sure when you're recasting things or when you're remaking things, it doesn't come across like there was something wrong with the original. It doesn't come across like we're doing it because we're remaking it because it needed to be remade. And I think that message is very muddled and very confused now. And as, honestly, I never cared until I had a kid, until I had someone who it's my responsibility to guard and who I worry about the challenges they'll face. And for someone who might, in their lifetime, especially the way it's in 2019, might feel prejudice against themselves and lowered self-worth maybe because of some of the lunacy that's out there. And, you know, if you have a team that, for example, let's say it's a team of six people, you know, four of them are white, and then two of them are not. If they remake it and five of them are not white and one of them is white, that seems like an extremely forced and sort of motivated action, and it seems that since that can never happen in the reverse, it kind of insinuates that there's, you know, there's a disbalance there, and there's a disparity. So, I don't necessarily care what the race or ethnicity is for most characters, but I do care when things take me out of the story, when things take me out of being able to immerse myself in the escapism of a movie or a TV show. It doesn't necessarily play well. For example, I was playing Shadow of War the other day, and I was like looking in the PlayStation Store for updates, and they've introduced a DLC where there's like a black character that you play. I think that's super cool on the notion that there's a black character that you can play, but there's literally no black people that you see in any of The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings, so I think it feels a little, like, it felt a little strange. It felt like I think even, you see the Haradrim, I think maybe Arab-looking or something, but as, you know, as a minority person who's grown up in probably the most diverse and ethnically multicultural city in the world, and I say that proudly, is not at all as a complaint. I think Toronto's probably one of the greatest cities someone can grow up in, and I've had friends and you know, friends and girlfriends and almost family members of every origin and culture that I can think of, and I've never, I don't think of myself at all as a prejudicial person, and I think that with some trends, with some creative intellectual properties, it's sometimes not wrong to continue the way they've been, because oftentimes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, for example, the casting of James Bond as a black woman, I think I'm all for the creation of a spy movie wherein a black woman is the titular character and she kicks ass and seduces men in a James Bondian way. But again, why can't you create your own? Why can't she be 009 or something? Or why can't her name just be like a Jack Reacher, like a whatever her name is, Jill Reacher? I don't understand. Again, it's been a consistent legacy of a character that was written by Ian Fleming, a British guy, as far as I know. It's like a tremendous escapism for people at the time to read about the luxury foods Bond would be eating and the drinks and the beautiful women and the you know, globetrotting and killing. And the movies themselves have a legacy, and I think it's a little unfair, again, to treat it like the fact that they haven't had a black woman is wrong and it's a crime. It's not overdue. It's overdue that, again, there is a movie with that, but it doesn't necessarily need to replace what's previously there. My biggest issue with these Disney remakes, the live-action ones, is that you can't make a movie again, like in Lion King, is a second animated movie with the exact name and title font and soundtrack as Lion King. So are you saying that you're remaking it because there was something wrong with the first one? I mean, are we supposed to get on board with this being the only one? Are they going to stop selling the classic one, the toys? I mean, that was... People are always going to be bothered by change, I get that. And when you have hindsight and you look back at these movies that caused a stir, it always seems so small. But there seems to be something a little troubling about the pattern of forced inclusivity in movies, because at the end of the day, I love everybody, but I think that in a movie, a role should be filled by the best person to fill that role, and roles should be written for what's best for the story. So if you have a movie and it calls for a protagonist, and the protagonist is supposed to be X, Y, and Z, then find the best actor that brings X, Y, and Z to the table. Don't, you know, use whatever program you use to go through resumes and portfolios and click the tab and, like, turn off white just for the sake of it. Don't discount people or don't bring in people simply for appearances or for cultural affiliations. Give it to the best qualified actor, because I know there are amazing actors in the Latino community and in the Black community and in the Haitian community and in the Iranian community and in the Latvian community and the Latvian community. One of them is ruled by Dr. Doom. I have a hard time remembering which. I just mean that there's always going to be amazing actors. And I think that you would, if you need, firstly, if you really want to diversify your representation, you should get people that aren't really known Hollywood names. And they're starting to do that more, which is great. But hire more writers, directors, what have you, who come from these communities that you're looking to appease, and let them create the kind of content that we'd all be better for seeing. More authentic stories, more genuine inclusivity. But don't, you know, don't take Blade and cast a white guy, because that feels forced and weird. So don't, you know, you don't need to take Ajak, the, like, 8-foot-tall, crushing, immortal dude fighter, and make it Salma Hayek, because that's a good way to get more Latinas and more, you know, people and women and fans. It's just, it's, you know, they call it AstroTurf. That's not actually what AstroTurf is, but AstroTurf is the companies that pretend to be grassroots corporations and movements so that they can sway public opinion and have a hand in steering things without the culprits really being apparent. It's great John Oliver on it, so that's obviously what I was watching a week ago. But I use grassroots here in that it feels like it's a very positive, very organic event that's happening. Like, of course it's long overdue that this happens. Of course, yeah. Like, white people have had their moment in this. Like, but it's really shouldn't about, it shouldn't be about that. It shouldn't be about race, genetics, or anything other than movie making and what services the plot and the story the best. And if you want to write in that, you know, 009 is taking over because this and that, I think that's amazing. But if you want to do whatever yada 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 and you're going to do to make it just about having someone there that you think makes people happy, I think that you're creating your movie for the wrong audience. So power to the people. I mean, power to Camille Nanjiani is probably, I mean, I guess Dupinder is not the first South Asian superhero. I'm probably forgetting one, but that's probably going to be awesome and big, and obviously we have the first hearing impaired. And, you know, there's just, it's great to see these strides happen. I just think we have to be careful in not forcing them, because then are we really taking those strides, or are they just sort of being made synthetically for us? And, you know, I don't know. Something to think about. I don't want to sound too bitter and jaded, and I hope I didn't offend anybody. Again, I'd like to be proven wrong. I would love for someone to show me that this is something that is more positive and organic, and show me that there's instances the other way around of the, you know, the cultural changing of a character happening both ways. But as it stands, it's still kind of early to make any judgments on these movies. As I said, some of them, because it's the Marvel machine, I'll be butts in that seat anyway, but, you know, I think a good mantra to live by is just ask your questions and do your research, okay? So if they're coming out with this movie and you have a weird vibe about it, maybe you don't, maybe you think it's amazing. Either way, whatever your reception to it is, look into it, do some research, check different sources. You know, you gotta be informed. I think it's everyone's duty, not only in 2019, but in just today's day and age. It very much is more important than ever to be aware of what's happening in the world around you and to be able to effectively spot bullshit, because oftentimes real facts and truths are kind of covered up by people shouting fake news, and it's, you have to know when that's a crying of wolf. So yeah, I think probably cap it there. I mean, we touched on Disney, but I wanted to rail a little bit on subscription services, because it's getting crazy. So for anyone that doesn't know, pretty much every company is getting ready to cut up their properties and rearrange them so that they have their own pay over the top subscription service. So you got your Disney Plus, HBO Go, or Crave if you're in Canada, Amazon Prime, you got Hulu, you got Roku for whatever good that is. Obviously you have, you know, your specific Crunchyrolls and your sports ones. I don't even, yeah, clearly that's the one for me. So it kind of sucks because when you see how they're taking stuff away and what they're divvying it around to, if you want to watch Friends, you're going to have to subscribe to, I don't know, let's say HBO Go. And if you want to watch The Simpsons, you got to have Disney Plus. But if you wanted to watch Man in High Castle, you got to have Prime. And that's not going away. That's going to get worse because they're going to start really bargaining and dealing around for the rights of the popular shows. The upside being, they're going to have to start creating a lot of their own content. So for Disney Plus, the stuff that they're coming out with is amazing. I mean, the lineup that we saw at Comic-Con was like a Loki show, a Vision and Scarlet Witch show, which if you've read, I think it's more than just a man or barely a man or something, the Vision comic, it's amazing. You'd be surprised how rewarding a story about him and his boring suburban life could be. But Falcon and Winter Soldier is the match made in heaven. That if you saw Civil War, you walked out of that thinking, get those two a fucking buddy cop show or movie. So the shows are going to be amazing. I have very few complaints about the shows. But they're all going to file right into Disney Plus as launch titles for a lot of them. It's going to mean amazing content, which is not surprising from Disney. But it also means the other ones are going to have to step up their game, and with few exceptions, like Handmaid's Tale and Man in High Castle. Handmaid's Tale, I actually got to work on an episode or two of that. I can't talk about it until I think the new season's fully out, but that one was cool. So hopefully it prompts networks to make lots of good quality shows so that you want to, you know, they want to earn your favor and earn your support and your viewership. But unfortunately, the old content is what's going to get people, and wanting to watch American Dad and being subjected to register for a service that doesn't have much else but that one show is definitely going to be something that they are banking on. And these aren't cheap subscriptions, man. We're talking realistically, and across the board, there's going to be some competitive normalization of the prices, but we're looking at like $15 to $20 on average, depending on your subscription. So everyone and their uncle is going to get Disney Plus, obviously, because that's where all the superhero movies will be. Not that there's a lot of them I don't own at this point, but that's where they're all going to be. It's where all the Disney movies are going to be. It's where all these amazing shows are going to be. And their tendrils have gone pretty far with the Fox thing, so it's also where, like, all the seasons of The Simpsons are going to be, and so on. So anyway, I'm just worried about how much it's going to cost in total. So even if you want two of those subscriptions, you're looking at between $30 to $40, depending on how much they cost, realistically. The math on that may seem inaccurate, but I'm assuming it's $15 at the minimum, $20, thereabouts, the maximum. And there's definitely going to be a need for more than one, so I'm hoping that there's worthwhile content, but as it stands now, I mean, I've been really unhappy with Netflix for the past, I don't know, 5-6 months, half a year more. Canadian Netflix is just so much crap, and so much of the time, there's, you know, the start of the month, a dump of new content, and it's crap. It's like 3 movies you recognize, one of which came out kind of recently, the others are kind of from the past couple of years, and then the rest is like shows and movies that you just don't really give a shit about. I'm like, oh, I'll have that on in the background. Amazon Prime is the one I'm probably the biggest fan of, just because I'm a huge fan of Amazon Prime, and I order a lot of stuff and have it delivered in a neat, tidy amount of time. And it's just a bonus that we get that service, so I think that's quite worthwhile. Same with the music, although I use Spotify. My wife uses it. She says it's pretty good. I will take a minute to say fuck Amazon, though. I'm not going to sling their praise, certainly not without sponsorship. But we ordered an air conditioner on Wednesday because we were staring down the barrel of what was supposed to be one of the worst heat waves in our city's history. and especially high humidity on the weekend. And again, Arthur, my baby's like 2.5 months, so we have one air conditioner already. It's like it's like 8,000 BTUs. It's pretty good, but it doesn't do more than one room, realistically. It's an old building. We don't have central. So all the stores in my area, Home Hardware, Home Depot, Rona, Walmart, Best Buy, Loblaws, Canadian Tire, Staples, and I hope some of those sounded uniquely Canadian to you abroad, but some of those should be international, or at least inter-American enough, North American. Yeah, none of those places had them, because the ones that did only had them online for some reason, and even though you could, like, buy it and get it delivered to the store, and you had to do all that online, and just, I needed one as soon as possible, so after, like, wasting a day hunting it down, I resigned to the easiest option, actually, being Amazon. So I looked, and there were some decent ones. Nothing, of course, was helpfully on sale on Prime Day, so thanks for that. Anyway, make a long story short, we bought it, said it would deliver by Friday, which would be ideal, because of the fucking heat wave. Did not show up on Friday. My wife's home all day. And then we get zero calls or pages or buzzers from a delivery person, and then they have the fucking audacity at, like, 7:30... to call us and say, oh, well, we missed, you missed the driver. They failed to reach you, so they're going to try and deliver it again on Monday. And it's like, go kill yourself. That's ridiculous. And the only thing we could do in following through with their support network of people you could call was be told that no one can make deliveries after 7 o'clock, so the soonest is Monday. And I fucking know you guys can deliver on a Saturday or Sunday. Fuck off. Like, I've run stores and have had to have shipments come in on a weekend and charge a premium to Amazon. Fine, I don't give a shit. Bring us our air conditioner. So we had to end up going out of town because Amazon sucks. So, subscription services. DC Unlimited? DC Online? I don't know. DC came out with their own in the States, and for some really infuriating reason, it's not in Canada yet. But that's one that I would readily give my money to because to have all the DC stuff in one place would be super useful. And I own a lot of it on DVD, but if we're talking shows and everything, no, and it's great to have. And they similarly are coming out with their own sort of content just for the streaming. And looks pretty cool. I got the, let's see, I'm trying to decide what I'm able to and not able to say. I got to work on Titans, which is amazing. I'll keep that kind of vague until season 2 is out and everything, but it's a very cool show. It's a show that, to be honest, I came in with skepticism as just a lifetime Teen Titans fan, Teen Titans Go fan, comic book fan, and there were some things in the onset that raised my eyebrows a little bit, but it delivered a pretty good, dark, tight Gotham story, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of it, but DC's got a bunch of stuff coming out. They have Batwoman, and they have, I think, some Constantine stuff, and it's going to be great. They just need to play to their strengths. They've always been better with the animated content anyway. I think there was a Marvel show called Avengers Assembled or something. It was, I don't know, like 2010, 12. They did a lot of the classic Avengers stories. It had, like, they had the mansion, the Avengers mansion, and eventually they all started being based out of there. It was great. They did, like, Kang the Conqueror. I think they did Thanos? No, I think Kang, like, defeated everybody. And they did, like, a new Avengers thing with Spider-Man and The Thing. And good show. But that's pretty much it. They don't deliver great animated product. And then DC, by comparison, doesn't often deliver the best cinematic product. But hopefully if this time next year I'm laughing about this with my three... So I'm going to assume three subscriptions. I'm going to say DC UO, fucking the DC one, Disney Plus, for sure, and presumably Prime. So that's not bad, but that's still way more money than it used to just be for a $10 Netflix account and watching what felt like all the content in the world. And this all comes at a time where a record number of people are unplugging the cable, so this notion that started the move towards where we are now was because cable is, quote, too expensive, and I guarantee you within a year you're going to be paying way more for your assortment of subscription services than cable, but oh well. I'm dropping stuff. Anyway, thank you for listening, guys. as per usual, please feel free to reach out. Comments, criticisms, you know, I would, I guess, ask that you keep them civil, but I do enjoy hearing what you guys have to say. I'm going to try to put this one out today in a timely manner and then have a following one, but timing is always so hard to get right. Mostly because I do all this stuff myself, and sometimes in between, like, being a dad and having a job in the government and stuff, so, you know. But you guys do you, and, try not to die in that heat, because, though we left town, I was following a bit of the weather news, and as per usual, there's always a sad assortment of the elderly and homeless people that are kind of victim of the heat, and it's like, careful out there, you know? And also, we touched on it last time at the very end, but the Storm Area 51 event is now, like, so real and realized that the Army and Air Force are getting military briefings about it and how to, like, protect and deal with it. Hotels in the area are fully booked for the days before and after the raid. And there's just an astounding amount of very half-cocked battle plans that usually involve monster energy drinks and, like, furries assaulting the guards sexually. But what a whirlwind this meme has gone on. So I'm watching that with some pretty vested interest. Debating going there for the raid. Not necessarily to participate on crossing into the Area 51 area and getting shot, but to sort of, like, find somewhere that's, you know, low-key, out of the way of everything, but high enough vantage that with some binoculars you can kind of watch, I'm going to air quote, history unfold. So, anyway, I think this was a Return of the Kings type ending, where it ended a bunch of times, so you thought, but this time, I'll give you the actual ending. So, thanks for listening, guys. I'll see you next time.